Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my great pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but around the world, but also to welcome to the programme four exciting, talented, and humorous personalities who have come together to play Just a Minute. And they are seated on my right, Dave Gorman and Clement Freud, and seated on my left, Giles Brandreth and Marcus Brigstock. And would you please welcome all four of them? And as usual, I'm going to ask them to speak on a subject that I will give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. Beside me sits Trudy Stevens, who's going to help me keep the score. She'll blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Hay Festival at Hay on Wye. And we're here in a huge marquee, and we have a very excited literary festival audience in front of us, of all ages, sizes, and denominations, as we start the show with Marcus Brigstock. Marcus, a lovely subject to begin with. Hay fever. Will you tell us something? Don't go like that. We have a few puns occasionally. Hay fever, Marcus, 60 seconds, starting now.
What a very suitable topic hay fever is for this wonderful event held here at the Hay-on-Wye Literary Festival. Hay fever is really what describes the frenzy of excitement that the good people of Hay get themselves into when they know that we're all going to arrive and invade their town and fill it with our thoughts and ideas and our highfalutin commentary.
Giles has challenged.
Deviation, this is a distinguished literary festival. They actually come to hear Martin Amis, Julian Barnes, Cherie Booth, QC. We are a sort of puff pastry added on at the end of the day. Since they've hired the tent, Nicholas was seen trolling the streets, bumping into Bill Oddie, thinking that he was... Well, in fact, it wasn't Bill Oddie. It was just somebody coming wandering along towards the festival. The point is, it was deviation.
And the point is, Giles, I don't think it was deviation. If you feel you're a bit of puff pastry, I think you should stick to that thought yourself.
If you do that but again, I'll fill you with cream
mushroom. It was a very nice plug. Very nice plug for all the other people who are here at the Literary Festival. But we like to think that a lot of people have come here just to listen to Just a Minute. So it wasn't deviation, so Marcus, you have a point for an incorrect challenge, and you keep the subject, and there are 38 seconds available, starting now.
Of course, hay fever also manifests itself when tiny amounts of pollen lodge themselves into your eyes and navel cavity, making your face itch and turn red and pour with snot and other hideous things that dribble down your face.
Giles, challenge again.
Repetition of face.
Yes, you did repeat the word face.
Oh, yes.
Oh, do you see?
See how they can turn?
So, Giles, you have a correct challenge this time. You get a point for a correct challenge. You take over the subject. There are 23 seconds still available. And that noise, by the way, was not someone greeting Giles before he started. It was a huge gust of wind that came in through the side of the tent and almost lifted the roof off. 23 seconds available, Giles. Hay fever, starting now.
Hay fever is a phrase that describes the erotic charge that one receives when one arrives in hay for this particular gala.
Marcus challenged.
Repetition of one.
Oh, that was a bit of a sharp one, wasn't it? Yes. You did repeat
making
one,
making a total
afraid.
Of two, in fact.
Yeah. Yes. So, Marcus, if that's the way you're going to play it, carry on. Right. 17 seconds. Back with you, Marcus. Another point, of course. Hay fever starting now.
The problem with getting the subject of hay fever back is that I've exhausted both of the routes that I...
Dave, challenge.
Oh, it was a hesitation.
It was a hesitation, Dave.
Certainly was.
So we're going to hear from you on the subject as well. There are 12 seconds still available. Dave Gorman, hay fever starting now.
A limerick writer.
Clement Challenge.
That was a hesitation.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
And Dave hasn't played as often, but he was taking a breath, and I think he was only halfway through the breath, so I give him the benefit of the doubt and say it was teetering on a hesitation, but it didn't quite establish it. So, Dave, you have an incorrect challenge. You have a point for that. You take the subject still. 11 seconds. Hay fever starting now.
A limerick writer from Hay developed a fever one day. His temperature rose, sweat dripped from his nose, and his ability to write verse was severely diminished to the point where he no longer used anything like the right number of syllables.
In this game, whoever is speaking as the whistle goes gains an extra point. And it was Dave Gorman, and of course, Dave's got 3 points. You're in the lead, Dave, at the end of that round.
And can I go now?
No, give us some more limericks later. And Dave, we'd like you to begin the next round. The subject is losing the plot. Will you tell us something about losing the plot in just a minute, starting now?
Losing the plot is a phrase one hears all too often these days. Why, earlier before this recording, I heard Marcus Brigstock, Giles Brandreth...
Giles, who challenges?
Repetition.
What?
Heard. But no, in a different tense.
I said hears and heard.
And that was the deviation.
I think you're deviating from your challenge now, so... Incorrect, Giles. I'm sorry,
I'm
Dave.
I'm just on the wrong sort of drugs. I do apologize. I'm so confused. They keep changing them. I'm on Class A because I'm a snob.
I know. 53 seconds, Dave. You had an incorrect challenge. You keep a good point. Of course, losing the plot still with you. 53, starting now.
And Clement Freud used that. Oh.
Yes, Clement, what is the challenge? Oh, I suppose deviation from your name as it came out of his mouth. Right, yes.
Twice.
And exactly. So we give you the benefit of the doubt, and you've got 51 seconds, Clement, losing the plot, starting now.
The Beckhams were staying at the Savoy Hotel and got a taxi to London Airport. And the driver said, "Did you find anywhere good to eat?" To which the great Manchester United and Real Madrid footballer said, "We did, actually. Give me the name of it."
Dave, you challenge. Do you want to finish the story first, Clement, or are you going to save it?
I'm leaving.
So, Dave, your challenge.
There was a very definite hesitation.
It was a definite hesitation, so you get
you
a point.
You need a definite hesitation in a joke.
I would very much like to hear the end of the joke.
All right.
And the driver said, "Where did you eat?" And David Beckham said, "Give me the name of a station." The taxi driver said, "Waterloo." He said, "No." "King's Cross." He said, "No." "Paddington." He said, "No." "Victoria." He said, "Yes." "Victoria, where did we have dinner?"
Clement, that was a wonderful story, but hardly one to choose to tell in just a minute with all the hesitations. No. We admire your bravery. Dave, you had a correct challenge of hesitation, and you've got 35 seconds to take back the subject of losing the plot, starting now.
My colleagues all spoke to me before, saying, "Nat Nicholas Parsons, he's losing the plot."
Marcus challenged.
Yes, it's a deviation from the word "that," which was pronounced "nat" instead.
Come on, Marcus.
He said Nat Nicholas Parsons.
No. He did say Nat, but he got
on. As in Nat King Cole, it was a reference.
Yes, I did, but it was in reported speech. I was referring to what you told me earlier. Now, if you said to me earlier, "Nat Nicholas Parsons," I cannot be held responsible.
I think a little bit of the hay fever you were talking about it affected him there, and that became a gnat. I think I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, Dave. Keep the subject. 30 seconds. Losing the plot, starting now.
Of course, our chairman is not losing the plot, because in order to lose something, one...
Marcus Chan.
Deviation, he certainly is. I mean, no offence, and I'd love to win and all, but he is.
Marcus, I used to like you.
Nicholas, I still like you. Why? Because you lose the plot every time you host this wonderful game, and that's why it's so enjoyable to play.
No. In order to lose the plot, one has to possess it first.
I think if I lost the plot, I couldn't host the show. So I'm sorry, Marcus, I disagree with you. And you have another point, Dave, and you have 27 seconds, losing the plot, starting now.
Down on my local allotment, the competition for plots is very keen. A friend of mine, Albert, Brian, Carl, Donald, Eric, Frank, George, Harrison, was one of the gardeners who was very keen on securing a plot for himself, but lost the plot in an auction online on the eBay...
And Clement challenged.
Repetition of honest, disgraceful.
It was on, yes, and online.
I was going on, and not online is one word, though.
No, it's hyphenated. It may have... The elision may have gone now. You know, it might be it's all one word, but, you know, things do change as grammar progresses and so forth, and I don't know what I'm talking about. So no. Clement!
Can I have my point, then, for when I said you... No, all right.
I'm not going to give you a point for insulting me.
No.
Clement, 7 seconds on losing the plot, starting now.
What is very excellent is that if you have an allotment, the local authorities have been ordered not to take them away. Fight.
So Clement Freud was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's now in second place behind Dave Gorman, who's in the lead, and they're both ahead of Giles Brandreth and Marcus Brigstock in that order. And Clement, would you begin the next round? It's a whale of a time. 60 seconds, starting now.
The Bible makes a number of references to whales. Like in the book of Genesis, whales were created by God as if other things were not. And in Matthew, Jonah got ate by a whale. He made his home in an old whale's abdomen. It ain't necessarily so, although the final phrase did not come from the good book, but elsewhere.
I must say, you're the only person who's ever got a laugh on an positive hesitation. Giles, I recognise it, so I give it to you. You have a correct challenge. 33 seconds, a whale of a time, starting now.
You will recall that is a government minister called Ed Balls, and I used to go out with his elder sister, Ophelia, who did not live up to her name, but nonetheless we had a whale of a time together. Don't ask me why I was called Moby Dick, but that was the nickname that she gave unto me. She herself was a bit like a whale. The spout was amazing. We would go out together in a rowing boat, I playing the role of Captain Ahab, she essaying to play the part of Starbucks.
Margus.
Repetition of playing.
Playing the part.
Oh. I thought I said a saying the role and playing the part. Mm. And you transliterated it into the same thing because you're banal.
If I knew what transliterated meant, I'd probably be offended. Fortunately, for both of us, I'm pretty thick.
Well, that's what you and Ophelia had in common, yeah. But I like a big girl.
The gloves are off. Right. Marcus, a correct challenge. You have the subject, and you have only 2 seconds to go.
Oh, no.
Yes. A whale of a time, starting now.
A whale of a time is a phrase that is often used when describing...
So, Marcus Brigstock was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he's moved forward. He's still in third place with Giles, just behind Clement, and a few behind Dave Gorman, our leader. And Marcus, back with you to begin. The subject is The Village Idiot. I'm sure it doesn't apply to you, Marcus.
No.
Absolutely not. No. But will you talk on the subject starting now?
The position of village idiot is one that I have always wanted to fulfill myself. There is no limit to how far one can go if you become the village idiot. Take, for example, Boris Johnson, who has recently been elected, accidentally, I might...
Giles Brandreth's challenge.
The great town and city of London cannot be described as a village.
Although, interestingly, since Boris became mayor, I think it's safer that it be described as a village.
So I think you weren't deviating within the rules of just a minute, Marcus.
Oh, right.
So you keep the subject. You have a point for that. Good. And you have the village idiot and 45 seconds starting now.
One of the reasons one seldom sees a village idiot these days is because it's very difficult to get hold of a beige smock. They used to be available in many a decent outfitter, but now it's incredibly hard to actually find one. However...
Dave Challenge.
Repetition of hard. It was hard to find a beige smock.
Bound to find, and it's incredibly hard.
I've absolutely no idea. If Dave thought so, I would think almost certainly. He's very good at spotting these sorts of things.
That's right, yes. And that's the way we play the game.
Oh, good! Well, this all should work nicely, then.
A point to you, Dave, and 32 seconds available. The Village Idiot, starting now.
I once stayed in the village
Clem, would you challenge?
Repetition of go.
Yeah, I know that one too coming up, Clem. What we do, as the name of that village is
continuous one single word. The go-go is part of that word. But what we do is to give you a bonus point because we all enjoyed your interruption. 26 seconds are still available with you, Dave. The village idiot starting now.
Which leads me to question the wisdom that there is only ever one idiot per village. I was...
Giles challenged.
Hesitation.
Yes, I think it was hesitation,
yeah, it was.
Giles.
It was.
So 20 seconds are still available for you. Tell us something about the village idiot starting now.
The village idiot is the name of a pub in my local village. Politically incorrect is the name in my view. It was previously called the village woofter. And I'm not sure that the village idiot is necessarily an improvement. But the Mexican boy who runs it stands behind the bar wearing the smock that has been described so charmingly by Marcus, with some lovely tatting up the side.
So Giles was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's now moved into third place, just ahead of Marcus, just behind Clement, and a few behind Dave Gorman. And Giles, we're back with you to begin, and the subject now is a hornet's nest. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
I'll tell you where is a hornet's nest, and that is the members' dining room of the House of Commons. The Conservative MPs sit at one end of the room, the Labour folk at the other end of the room. Oh, it's such a shame, because I wanted to tell you about the Liberal Democrats who wait at table.
Yeah. It's lovely to tell jokes in this show, but it's a temptation you have to resist because you repeat. We give you a bonus point because we enjoyed the joke, right? But Marcus, you had a correct challenge, yes. And you have a hornet's nest. You have 49 seconds starting now.
A hornet's nest can be an incredibly dangerous thing, particularly if you poke it with a stick, which is why George W. Bush's foreign policy has always baffled me, since he seems absolutely determined to whack the nest as hard as he possibly can with as many implements as he can lay his grubby little hands on. However,
Yes, the audience spotted it first.
I unraveled
Giles,
slightly.
You challenged first.
Yes, indeed.
Hesitation. We heard the 29 seconds. Back with you, Giles. A hornet's nest starting now.
As a child, I had a nest of hornets. It was the name of a wonderful comic that, as a little boy, I used to enjoy every Thursday afternoon. In my childhood, which was not a misery one. Oh, no, not for me.
Marcus challenged.
My childhood was not a misery one, I think, is a deviation from English.
Oh, no, I'm going to talk about the hornet's nest and not having a misery memoir and my childhood being a happy experience, and how I got this comic on a Thursday afternoon. It was twopence. It went up to threepence in 1959.
That was lovely stuff, but I think it was the way we're using language now, that was deviation from language as we understand it. So I give the benefit...
It was current usage in your day.
And when I was this at age, it was current usage, but we're not. We're in the adult period of our lives, and that's the way we're going to use language now. So, Marcus, benefit of the doubt, you have the subject, you have 18 seconds, a hornet's nest starting now.
I was once painting the roof of a cottage in Canada on a small island in one of the lakes there, and I stepped back to admire my work and placed the heel of my bare foot directly into...
Clement, your challenge.
3 miles.
My.
Funny how you get caught out.
Yes. And so, Clement, you come in with 8 seconds to go on the subject of a hornet's nest starting now.
I understand that in Market Harborough there's only one hornet, therefore absolutely no need to have a nest because he sleeps in the traffic.
Clement Freud, speaker's a whistle when, gained another point, has moved forward. He's only two behind our leader, Dave Gorman. And Dave is three ahead of Giles Brandreth and Marcus Brigstock. And Dave, it's back with you to begin. And the subject now is the far side of the moon. We've had some great literary expressions in this show, but let's talk on that one starting now.
The far side of the moon is the name of a career-defining, long-playing record by the prog rock band Pink Floyd.
Marcus challenge.
Deviation.
What?
The Dark Side of the Moon is the title of that great, brilliant 1973 classic Floyd album. Best album ever recorded.
All right, you needn't emphasise it. We know you're right.
Anyway, yeah.
Yes, it is the Dark Side of the Moon.
I thought that was the subject.
No, it isn't. It's the far side of the moon.
In which case, I simply misheard the subject.
So Nicholas deviated.
I think my diction's sufficiently good to carry it over there, and you haven't misheard anything yet. So I'm going to decide that you did hear it, but you misinterpreted it.
Pardon?
And Marcus has a...
Did someone speak?
So, Marcus, you've got a correct challenge. I give the benefit of the doubt back to you if I get the opportunity, Dave. 52 seconds. The far side of the moon, Marcus, starting now.
The moon has a magnetic pull much smaller than that of the Earth. However, it is enough to slingshot a spaceship round the far side of the moon. And I believe this is the technique that was used by the Apollo 13, which was so badly stricken and ran out of important things that they needed to get them safely back down here onto our planet, where, of course, we all live so very happily and safely. Having travelled round the far side of the moon, the astronauts made contact with Houston and said, "Here we are, we've made it round the far side of the..."
Clement challenged.
It wasn't Houston.
No, Houston, not Houston.
Ah.
Houston's a very good station, but they're not... They're not equipped to deal with international space travel. And I only say that because I've taken a train from there once.
He definitely said Houston. So I'm afraid it was an incorrect challenge, and you have another point, Marcus, and you have 19 seconds. The far side of the moon starting now.
If I didn't live in the sunny, leafy suburb of...
Jar's challenge.
Live. Repetition of live. Earlier on, he came
we
back
all live
to live
happily.
In this country where we all live,
live
so happily.
Happily. Quite right, he did say that.
Yes.
We all live happily.
Repetition from a separate section.
Yes.
You're playing this on a whole other level, Brandon.
That is the premise of the game, and if you can be clever enough to remember back, you can get those challenges in. Giles, you have a correct challenge. You have 17 seconds. The far side of the moon, starting now.
As I recall, the far side of the moon is rather an amusing gay bar in Alicante. I went there some years ago when I was on holiday with Nicholas Parsons. We were trying to get in touch with ourselves. A midlife crisis is a difficult thing for a man of riper years, and Nico said...
Listeners, all the audience are looking at me, and I wasn't saved by the whistle. I mean, Giles was. Really, that's disgraceful.
Well, it was deviation of a kind, wasn't it?
It was.
It was, I recall, not much hesitation. All you kept saying was repetition, repetition, please.
And it only lasted just a minute.
Oh, dear. I suppose Sean could be proud of repetition and then we're in that particular situation. But anyway, let's move on because it's... Giles, I tell you what I will do there. We'll give you a bonus point because the audience really did enjoy what you said. And we carry on to the next round, which is actually the last round.
Oh.
I know, isn't it sad? Oh, and Giles, with that extra point and one for speaking the whistle, you are now equal in the lead with Dave Gorman. But you are both only 2 points ahead of Marcus Brigstocke and Clement Freud, equal in second place. Oh, isn't it exciting? I'm glad you're so interested in the points. Clement, it's your turn to begin, actually. So, will you begin and talk about Sherlock Holmes? 60 seconds, as usual, starting now.
Sherlock Holmes is the name of a fictitious detective written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who died in 1930. Sherlock Holmes can't be pronounced by French people, who therefore call him Omlock Chairs, which is not very interesting, but actually true. Graham Grand is Graham Greene by the people from France.
Marcus, you challenged.
Yes, a bit of a hesitation.
There was a bit of hesitation. So, Marcus, you now have Sherlock Holmes, and you have 37 seconds, and you start now.
I've always fancied playing the role of Sherlock Holmes, and the main reason for this is that I have a lifelong addiction to laudanum and cocaine, and I know that this would qualify me uniquely.
Giles challenged.
Self-confessed deviation.
Yes. Yeah, that is... yes, I imagine, knowing Marcus quite well, that... He hasn't got that addiction.
Well, it's deviant behaviour. The point is, and the BBC must acknowledge this. Laudanum, opium, it's deviant behaviour.
In just a minute, you can say whatever you like, and you can deviate in thought, but you must not deviate in words. That is the premise of the show, Giles. I know you played it many times, and if you're not aware of it yet, I'm sorry. I will give the benefit of the doubt to Marcus and have 27 seconds. Sherlock Holmes, Marcus, starting now.
One of the things Sherlock Holmes is famous for is wearing a deerstalker hat. Another are his infamous battles with Moriarty, the criminal mastermind who so often came close to outflanking and outsmarting Sherlock Holmes.
A Clement challenged.
Sorry.
You don't want to
Big mistake.
You pressed your buzzer.
Yeah, that was the mistake.
I thought you were going to challenge him for out.
Yes,
yeah, repetition. But I don't think...
They're two complete words, you see.
They
I'm smart and
I'm smart. Smart. I know they are. I know they are. But I wondered if he was going to, that was going to be his challenge.
No,
it wasn't his challenge.
His
right,
remit.
Fine. So it was an incorrect challenge,
well,
wasn't it?
You're accusing me of doing something which you thought I said, which I hadn't.
No, actually,
when
Clement.
I apologized.
Clement, as an old
you're
friend.
You're dragging it on a bit.
No. As an old friend, and it's a very close contest, I was actually, you know, trying to give you the benefit of the doubt and bring you in at the end.
Yeah, I would like to be brought in at the end.
But now you've actually refused that opportunity. Marcus has an incorrect challenge. He keeps the subject. 14 seconds. Sherlock Holmes, Marcus, starting now.
Over and above his use of Class A drugs, Sherlock Holmes played a violin in order to...
Giles' challenge.
Not Class A drugs in 1888 when it was written.
No, they were not. That's well challenged.
And not laudanum.
No.
Or it being Class B.
No. I gave the benefit of the doubt to Marcus last time when you challenged on drugs. You have it this time, Giles. So you have 9 seconds. Sherlock Holmes starting now.
Jippy tummy alimentary, my dear Watson. He was so shrewd, Sherlock Holmes, and inhabited a pub off Northumberland Avenue, which now bears his name. Violin.
So Giles Brandreth was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and now I have to give you the final score. I would like to say that they were all equal because they all gave such wonderful value. But actually, only 1 point separated all four of them. In ascending order, it was Clement Freud, 1 point ahead. It was Dave Gorman, 1 point ahead. Marcus Brigstock, and only 1 point ahead, Giles Brandreth. So we sue say, going by the rules, Giles, this week you're the winner.
Oh.
For me to say thank you to these four intrepid players of the game, Dave Gorman, Clement Freud, Marcus Brigstock, and Giles Brandreth. I thank Trudy Stevens, who's helped me with the score, blown her whistle very sweetly and delicately. We thank... Well, she did blow it delicately. And we thank this lovely audience here at the Guardian Literary Festival at Hay-on-Wye for cheering us on our way. We also thank our producer, Talusha Galani, and we're indebted to the creator of this game, Ian Messiter. Tune in the next time we play Just a Minute. Goodbye!